You're tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network, featuring news, interviews, and commentary on all things Black Hollywood. Hollywood redefined. From Los Angeles, California, streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is Black Hollywood Live, Stand Up, Sit Down, featuring in-depth discussion and interviews with stand-up comedians on the art of stand-up comedy. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host for Black Hollywood Live, Stand Up, Sit Down.
There it is. Am I on beat? I'm on beat, right? Welcome to another edition of Stand Up, Sit Down. Your host, Nick Perdue. And this week, listen, I am joined by the last black unicorn currently starring on NBC's The Carmichael Show, as well as on TV's If Loving You Was Wrong, the hilarious, the beautiful, the talented Miss Tiffany Haddish.
Hey.
How are you?
She ready.
She is ready.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
It's Sunday, fun day. I'm excited. You're here, you know? I was really preparing for this thing, and I'm like, okay, Tiffany is, you know, because I know you're going to bring it, so I have to be able to keep up with the last black unicorn.
Right. You do need to be able to keep up, because I am going to go somewhere. Where are we going? I don't know. It depends on you. You the navigator.
All right. Well, but before we even really get started, because, you know, for people who don't know your comedy or who don't know who you are or the moniker, The Last Black Unicorn, where did that come from?
The Last Black Unicorn came from me being in elementary school and having something like a wart and or a horn growing out of my forehead, and kids making fun of me all the time, talking about, oh, you an ugly ass unicorn, or Tiffany, you came up here with them roaches on your face. Stuff they used to say, and I try to like take that and make it my own. Yeah, okay, right. Yeah, I'm a unicorn, and I love unicorns, to be honest with you. And also, there was this movie called The Last Unicorn that came out in the 80s that used to come on every Sunday,
right,
that I used to watch. I was like, why I gotta be a white unicorn? Why I can't be a black unicorn? And then, you know, it all just came together, and I am the last black unicorn. I'm a powerful, fantastic creature that, I'm magical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, you are living the dream right now.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
It's every
unicorn's dream, you're living it right now.
Every
comic's dream, you're living it right now.
Am I?
Yeah.
I hope so.
Two TV shows? Touring nationally?
Well, you know what? It's actually just one TV show, because I was doing the Tyler Perry series, If Loving You Was Wrong, but Tyler Perry let me on my contract so that I can go to NBC and make a little more money.
Okay.
So, yeah. But I do got a movie coming out with Key and Peele. Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, here's the thing. You're not slowing down, though.
No, I'm moving forward.
By any means. You're not slowing down.
Mm-mm.
Let's back it all the way up.
Mm-hmm.
Born in South Central.
That part.
Right? Mm-hmm. Born in South Central, and you had four siblings.
Mm-hmm.
Right? What was that like?
That was a tremendous experience. I was the oldest, so I'm the boss.
Right.
And I just tried to make sure everybody stayed alive and didn't die.
Yeah.
And we ate, and we was where we was.
Because I mean, especially like it was rough, like really that time growing up, right?
Right, it was super rough. We ended up in foster care for quite some time. My mom had a car accident and her head went through windshield, so she had to learn how to walk, talk, eat all over again. And then I was like eight or nine, and I was basically teaching her everything she ever taught me. Wow. So, and like helping with my brothers and sisters and doing a lot, man. That's why, right, I don't have no kids now, because I feel like I've been there, done that. And that's probably why I don't like dating dudes with kids either.
Yeah, because you don't want that extra responsibility.
Yeah, I really don't. I really don't want to be responsible for it. I got four grown ones.
Right.
And we all came out the same vagina.
Wow. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
That's the truth.
So when you guys went into foster care, did you guys stay together or were you guys broken up?
We were separated. My two sisters got put together, my two brothers got put together, and then I got put in a separate home. And that was super difficult, because I was like so attached to them, and
right,
so I care about them so much.
Right.
So then I would like catch the bus to their homes, because I knew where they were, and I would visit them and stuff and make sure they was good. But it was like a lot of work. I mean, you're like 13 years old catching a bus to three, you know, two different locations across the city, and But, you know, I got the gift of gab. I didn't have no money. I would just be, like, chopping it up with the bus driver. Like, look, I'm just a foster kid trying to go see my sisters and brothers and make sure they know who I am. Can I get a ride? And they would be like, all right, and here's a transfer. You know, like, wow. It was a lot of times if you just be honest, you can win a lot in life.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So.
I won bus passes.
In school. Mm-hmm. Were you the funny kid? Were you the class clown? Or, you know, because kids made fun of you. Mm-hmm. So, like, was using comedy, like, was that a defense mechanism? Like, where did Funny Tiffany come from?
Funny Tiffany came from Abused Tiffany. And watching, kids used to pick on me all the time. So then I try to turn it around and start picking back at them. And then I believe it started to turn into a thing where it became fun, you know, to crack these jokes or whatever. They like it seemed like they would go home and write shit just to say to me. It's like, I went up all night writing this for you, Tiffany. Like, so, but there was this movie called Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, yeah.
And where the rabbit is like getting all this stuff, and the detective says to the rabbit, why are all these people doing these things for you? And he said, because I make them laugh. If you make them laugh, people will do anything for you, Eddie. And I kind of took that and ran with it. And I thought to myself, if I make these kids laugh, then they won't beat me up. They won't, they might crack a few jokes here or there, but they're going to want me around because I'm making everybody laugh.
Right.
So I started dressing crazy, making up stupid songs, dancing like for no reason. Next thing you know, I'm the school mascot. I'm the most, you know, one of the most popular girls in school. And I didn't even have to sleep with nobody. I was class clown in junior high and high school. Most spirity, you know, most unforgettable. I was a lot of the mostest, you know.
Yeah.
People from my high school still remember, you know, 100 years later, they still remember me.
That's the best way to even really, you know, turn your bullies into like, okay, you know, Tiffany's cool.
Them laugh. And then also, I mean, I used it to my advantage because I couldn't read that good. So I would like be like, oh, I like your voice. Could you read this to me? And I had a great memory. So you would read something to me and I'd memorize. And I'd be like, you sounded so good. Oh, you smell good. Like, you know. And then, can I see your homework? Let me see your homework. Let me see if your homework look like my homework. And then, like, a dude like you, you would laugh like how you laughing. And you would give it to me. Wow. And I would copy it. And if you pass, I pass. And if you fail, I fail. We in this together.
So basically, you just cheated your way through. That's
I use the power of communication. I developed my communication skills in school. And I guess if you want to call it cheating, you can call it cheating. I want to call it developing communication skills and being able to be a manager, getting people to do things that they probably wouldn't normally do. Right. But it didn't hurt them and it didn't hurt me either.
Right. It's a win-win, right?
We all won.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got a good laugh and I got a good grade.
All right.
We win.
That works. So now stand-up wise, because I read that you went to the Laugh Factory comedy camp.
Right.
And then so how did that come about? Like where was that?
I was going to school out in the valley. I was getting in a lot of trouble because I was talking too much. So teachers kept sending me out of the class. And my social worker was coming up to the school all the time. Mm-hmm. She had to come up there. And because, you know, normally they would call your parents, but I didn't have the parents, so they would call my social worker. So she was getting tired of driving out there, and she was like, look, you got two choices this summer. You can either go to the Laugh Factory Comedy Camp or you can go to psychiatric therapy, which one you want to do? Oh, wow. And I was like, which one got drugs? She said, oh, you definitely going to be on drugs if you go to therapy. I was like, cool, well, I'll go to the comedy camp. And it was the best thing that ever happened for me. And not, I mean, granted, I mean, she had some inclination. That's probably what I needed to be doing because I was in drama. I was winning, like, all these drama competitions and stuff and like monologue, and I was the goofy kid at school, so it was like, oh, this makes sense, you know. She saw that talent in me and went ahead and like pushed me towards that, and it was, I mean, it taught me communication skills. I finally freaking made sure I learned how to read, how to write, how to put together things, and confidence. It really gave me great confidence, and I'm so grateful for that.
Nice.
The first time a man ever told me I was beautiful and I didn't think nothing bad was gonna happen, you know, like, oh my. And then I got to meet Charles Fleischer, who does the voice of Roger Rabbit. So it was like everything had came full circle for me. Like, oh my God, let me tell you, because of what you said, I've been getting B's in school because I've been cheating like a motherfucker.
So what was your first, like, official stand-up show like?
My very first official stand-up show was at the Laugh Factory. It was full of people. Industry was there, Nickelodeon, Disney, a lot of white people I'd never seen before. And it was weird. It was very weird. I wore a T-shirt that had a T. It was a Superman shirt, okay. But it had a T instead of an S for Tiffany. And I remember being really scared. Tasha Smith was the host. And the news was there, and my aunties had showed up, and that was super cool. And I went on stage, and I was telling my jokes, and everybody laughed, and I was hooked. Nice. After that, I was like, yeah, I like this. It's like I have power. Yeah. I can control the room of the sound. It's like it's the most awesome feeling in the world. Yeah, that's my crack.
Yeah,
I love it. I love to hear people laugh. I really love to see people's teeth, too. Like, seeing you smiling the whole time. I think that's awesome. I probably should have been a dentist, but I don't want to hurt nobody. So
just give them Novocaine.
Novocaine.
That's all you got to do.
I guess, Novocaine.
Yeah, Novocaine, punch them in the mouth. So I know all your shows weren't hitters. Mm-mm. You had a couple bombs in there.
A lot of bombs.
What was that like, your very first bomb? Like, how did you handle it? What did you do? Did you freak out, run off stage?
No, my first bomb was actually my first paid gig, like really paid. Like, the Laugh Factory paid me, but this was like a paid gig. And my auntie had booked me for it. I didn't know that she was a lesbian. And she was like, this is this big event, blah, 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 we doing. And then I find out it's an all, like, lesbian event. Once I'm on stage, I had brought my boyfriend, and all my jokes at the time was about boyfriends and getting a boyfriend and all that. And then they start heckling me and like, I got a boyfriend for you. You know, oh, his dick ain't doing my dick. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I gonna do? I remember I was 20 and I was scared as hell. And, oh my gosh. And I kept up there. Yeah. I felt like a piece of me. I did not leave the stage until they gave me my light. And they didn't really laugh. And it was just mostly yelling things at me and me yelling back at them. And then I got off the stage and my boyfriend's like, you're going to be all right. You're going to be all right. Don't trip. And they gave me my $50. And I was like, yep, this was worth it. It's $50. I mean, winning.
How long was the set?
The set was only 10 minutes.
So. It was the longest 10 minutes ever.
I've had some longer than that 10 minutes. Yeah, when you're dealing with police, those minutes are the super longest.
But on stage, though?
On stage? No, there's been longer than that. Like, I remember one time I was not feeling very well, and I had to do a 30-minute set, and I was feeling sick as hell. That was the longest set ever. That felt like 50 years went by, and I died a little bit.
But did you, you just went and just did it. You didn't want to cancel it. You didn't want to, like, what would make you cancel a show?
A thing that will make me cancel the show is like natural acts of God.
Okay.
Nobody's in there. Maybe it's just one man sitting there looking real creepy. Like, I love you, Tiffany. I'm probably going to leave.
Really? Not even for that one fan.
I mean, if he looks creepy, I'm leaving. If it's Boris Kojo, I'm going to stay and tell some more jokes. I'm going to just stand there and tell jokes. Okay, it's me and him, private joke time. And what else would make me cancel the show? If I'm in a hospital, if I am offered a gig that pays more than the gig that is supposed to pay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, that's
and,
just, you know.
If I feel like, basically, if I feel like I'm about to die, then I might cancel. But otherwise, I'm going
to
be there.
So you will be sick on stage, coughing and coughing away.
Yeah, giving it all the germs to the next comedian.
Wow. Okay. All right. So now you know. If you see Tiffany on stage coughing.
Hey, I love this shit. I'll die for it, man. I love it.
Now, because you talked about hecklers. So like now I'm sure you know how to really handle hecklers. Like, what do you do? Like, how do you, shut a person up?
Usually, I shut them down with... First of all, because they're heckling for a reason. They want to be acknowledged. They want to be part of the show.
Right.
So I'll say something to them to give them a chance to say something. And then I just either, it depends on what they say. You know, I'll either demolish their ass, like really like try to pull their soul out of their body. Or I'll just kill them with kindness, you know, and just hit them with a gang of compliments. And then it's like that fucks up their head.
Right.
You know? Yeah,
because I've never seen people just like, you have a great shirt on.
Yeah,
and he's like, oh
yeah, and like, tell some jokes.
and then you get back in, back into the
system. What do you do for a living? You lonely? What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? You okay? And then we'll just go and go.
Nice.
Yeah, it just depends on the scenario. But if somebody heckles me and I'm on my period, it's all bad.
I'm gonna
rip them a new one.
As you should, though.
I'm not gonna stop neither. when I should be stopping, I'm gonna keep going.
Just gonna keep going
to get them. Yeah, they're gonna be mad. They gonna never do that again.
When you write jokes and when you construct a joke and when they're like, this is gonna be a banger, what is the process like? What is your creative?
First, I have the thought.
Yeah.
Right, the thought, and then I try to jot that down. Then I try to call my friends and have conversations and interject that thought. Like, I was trying to write this joke about pole dancing and how I was trying to pole dance in this class, and I think I broke my coochie bone. So then I called my homegirl, like, girl, I took a pole dancing class, and I think I broke my coochie bone. What you mean, girl? I did break my coochie bone, and I had to get a cast on it, you know, the next one. So then they, like, extend it, and they'd be like, girl, you crazy. What if this? What if that? And we'll laugh and laugh, and I'm like, if my friends and I are laughing, this got to be going somewhere.
Right.
And then I'll try it on stage, and then all the parts that hit, I keep, and all the parts that don't hit, I let go. And then, yeah, I just mostly, yeah, I use my friends. Talk it out.
So how long does that process take for it to be like, to go from thought, talk it out with your friends, to like get like, okay, like I can use this in a...
It can happen in 20 minutes, that day.
Wow.
That day. I mean, I've been in a comedy club and we've been talking about something like I was married. So I was talking about domestic violence with one of the guys and he said something and I said something and he was like, that's funny, you should put that on stage. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I went up on stage and I did it right then.
Oh, wow.
And it hit and I keep that now.
Nice.
Like, so I'm not afraid to try something new like right then.
Right.
You know,
That's good.
I'm good for that.
That's good.
I feel like you should take chances like that.
But now, how long do you keep a joke if it's not working? Like, if it's something that you love, you want it to, you know?
Yeah, if it's something I love and I really want it to work, I will keep that thing in there probably for 2 months. I would just put it in the middle somewhere, you know, where it's okay to let the people down a little bit and be like, ah. And if it, after about 10 times, if it never hits, really after 3 times, if it's not hitting at all,
right,
then I really probably should just let it go. But I might revamp it, rewrite it, you know, maybe get some other ideas, try to brainstorm around it. But yeah, usually I try 3 months.
But like, have you ever brought a joke back though? Like, you're like, okay, this is trash, and then like something triggers something and you pull it out of the garbage and then, you know, work it back out?
Yes. Sometimes when you let a joke go, like, you know what, this is not working. Then maybe, I don't know, a year go by and somebody might heckle you in the crowd and then that joke pops like, right, oh, this will be perfect for right now. Or somebody reminds you of something, or I don't know, it's just, it'd be like, this would be perfect. And it just hits right there. And it might be the only time it ever works, you know, or it might work from then on into the future.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, this is probably one of the biggest questions that, you know, I'm sure you probably get all of the time, but you know, comedy, it's very one-sided. There's not a lot of female comedians out in the game. There's not a lot of female comedians like really killing it.
You know,
there's a few, and there's actually more, but people don't really know about all of the female comedians who are really out here like killing the game.
Yeah.
So do you think it's hard for female comedians to, you know, to get that recognition and to have to prove themselves like, hey, I'm funny as, you know, old boy over here who's bombed for 10 minutes.
Right. It's very difficult for a woman in this business. It's a predominantly man thing. I mean, everybody mostly probably wants to listen to a man more so than the woman. And it's so funny to me because people will say, oh, female comics aren't funny. Really? Who's the first person to make you laugh? Tell me who the first person was to make you laugh. And every 9 times out of 10, everybody's going to say, my mama. Right. Oh, so your mama wasn't funny, is what you're telling me. Your mama's not a humorous person. Well, no, my mama's not a comedian. No, but she make you laugh, though, right?
Right.
So women are funny. We are... Being a mother and things like that makes it really difficult to be as successful as a man. You need to be able to get on stage every single night. You need to be able to perform as much as possible. And when you have all these other life responsibilities, it's real difficult.
Right.
And that's probably part of the reason why I don't have kids, because I already did that. And I feel like my career is my child. It's my boyfriend. It's my everything. I really invest a lot into it. and I believe in it, and I think it's something that's good, that's going to change people's lives or inspire people. And I'm glad it's more women out here that's doing their thing and being, and it's a lot of funny females. And, there are a lot of not funny females, just like there's a lot of funny dudes and a whole lot of not funny dudes.
Right.
But you weed through and you figure out who's who and you decide who you like and who you don't like and stick with that, I guess. I mean, there's a lot of female comics I like. And there's a lot that I'm like,
Right.
Girl, you should go and have them kids, take care of them kids.
You know. What's your day job? What do you do?
You do hair. Girl, yeah, right. You funny in the shop. You're funny in the beauty
Save
shop.
Save the jokes for when you're doing the week.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially right now, Amy Schumer, right? She has been in the news talking about stealing jokes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one, how do you feel about, you know, people taking other people's, not necessarily intellectual property, but if they have jokes that mirror someone else's joke and then they do it, you know, like, do you steer clear of that? Or do you kind of like, okay, well, I know I have a joke like this, and you'll call someone like, hey, I'm doing a joke that's similar to yours. Or do you even?
I try to try to keep all my comedy original to me.
Mm.
So when I'm on stage, I'm talking about being in foster care. I'm talking about fucking with broke-ass dudes who cheat on me on video, and then I have to shit in their shoes. That's something that really happened. You know, like, I talk about stuff that really happened to me.
Right.
So if somebody was to take it and do it, you know, like, I have a joke about my grandma teaching me how to value myself, think of myself as a house.
Okay.
You know, to me, that's super important. And if I go somewhere and I see somebody else doing it, I'm gonna be like, oh, okay, so is your grandma from South Central Los Angeles too? Is your grandma named Alice? Like,
right.
if they just flip it and switch it or whatever, I've seen that done. I get a little bit upset, but not really, because I feel like, you know, imitation is the highest form of flattery.
Yeah.
I mean, that means that you came up with some genius shit and they want to be like you. So I know two times I've gone up to somebody and been like, hey, man, when you did that joke about this, you almost had me nailed. You almost did it just like me. But you need to try this and try that. And they'd be like, what do you mean? I'm like, you know what I mean. You know you're trying to do haddish. And that was dope. I mean, I'm super flattered. But next time, switch this word around here and switch that. And then do this and it'll get a better laugh. I mean, and maybe if you want to change the inflection in your voice so you can sound more like how when I do it, then you might get a better laugh next time. And then they'd be like, I'm so sorry. And they never do it again. It's like, you just got to call them out. Because sometimes people don't even realize they're stealing.
Right.
So, or that they, you know, because they could be watching you all the time and end up, it's slowly sleep,
it
seeps
just,
in there,
right.
And there you go.
Right.
I mean, I know somebody came up to me once, like, hey, you did a joke about pit bull puppies. I got a joke about pit bull puppies. I'm like, my joke is saying that I bought some pit bull puppies from Swami. But I got something like that off of an ice cream truck. Okay, but I actually bought pit bulls at the Slauson swap meet. There's a pet shop there, and I actually did it. Then that was not the punch. That's not the whole joke. You know,
right.
There's a whole array of other things that I say that you can actually do there. Like, you really can get a pap smear there. They have a health man that comes in, and they really do check your coochie for it. Like, there's a lot of things that actually happen there.
Right.
You know, so I'm sorry I didn't know that they do that on an ice cream truck, but I'm talking about some shit that really happened in my existence, and I apologize. I won't do that no more. Oh, no, no, you already put it on TV, so fuck you. Like, you know, it is what it is.
Now, I'm not going to let you just say you shit in someone's shoes and not talk about it.
What?
What happened?
I shit in his shoes. He had a video of him sleeping with another chick on my birthday while I was sitting at his grandma's house waiting for him to pick me up. And he made a movie instead. And he had my car. And the way that I found it was like 3 days later, I was at his place. And I was like, ooh, let's make a movie. I was on some Kardashian shit, I guess, before my time. And he snatched the camera from me, scratched my face. I still have a scratch on my face. And then he took the tape out and threw it in a dumpster. And then I was just like, okay. I waited like an hour, started pretending like I was really sick, left. It was raining. I climbed in the dumpster, was in there for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, found the tape, went into Walgreens, got an adapter so I could put it in my VHS tape, because I have VHS tape machine. This was like a Hi-8 thing. And then I watched the tape. Oh, then I couldn't, the adapter didn't work. Then I had to call my homegirl at 5 a.m, get her video camera. And then I took it back to my place, gave her a pack of Newports, took it back to my place, watched the video. Then I had learned how to make bootleg VHS tapes, bootleg movies. So I had took that movie that he did and I put it in the middle of Charlie's Angels. Because when I broke up with him, his folk family got mad at me. And they was like, you know, you breaking his heart. You can't do this. He love you, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, he don't love me. Right. They didn't believe me. So then I put that in the middle of Charlie's Angels and sent it to all of them, his mama, his grandmama, his auntie, everybody that called me and told me I couldn't break this man's heart. Sent that to them for Christmas. And then he had left some Stacey Adams and some Jordans at my house. And I had shitted in those, put them in a box, and took them over there to him, acted real sweet with him. And asked him if he wanted to play basketball. And then he put his foot in that shoe. I made sure I ate corn and everything so that he knew that it was human shit in there. And all the shit he put me through, he was walking through it, basically. And then his grandma got real mad at me because she had put the Charlie's Angels in on Christmas Day for all the kids to watch and stuff. And Then they got to see him and his thing. And then she cussed me out, and I told her I was going to make some money off of it. I never did put the video out there like that, but his auntie was like, my nephew got dick. And it was an experience.
So, moral of the story.
Don't screw me over on my birthday.
Jeez. You know what? I wasn't even expecting all that. But that's fantastic.
Not that it happened, but everything that you did. That's what happened.
Oh my goodness.
You know, I could have like slashed his tires or put sugar in his gas tank or something like that. You know, I could do something like that, but he didn't have no car. So.
Right, because he had your car.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Jeez.
So that's why I shit in his shoes.
Wow. Okay. Well, don't, you know. Clap every time you see it, just clap. Every time you see on stage, you see in the supermarket, just clap. You know what I mean? Every time you look at her Instagram, just clap, like it, and then clap. So she doesn't.
Yeah.
That is hilarious.
He did me wrong. Don't do me wrong.
Yeah. Jeez. Okay. Well, speaking of videotapes and, you know, TV, you've done some terrible segment.
Speaking of entertainment,
but you've done a TV. You did the Tonight Show. You did Chelsea Lately. The Arsenio Hall Show. Def Comedy Jam. One. How did that even happen? Like, how did you get your first TV spot?
My first TV spot was, That's So Raven. You talking about for stand-up or for...
Stand-up-wise, for stand-up-wise. And then we'll get into that.
Oh, so my very first TV spot doing stand-up was Bill Bellamy's Who's Got Jokes. And I auditioned, and, they gave me a chance, man. And they did not pay me one dime. I didn't make... Really? No money on that. Not even a residual check or nothing.
Because that still
they
comes
still
up.
Rerun it, and I get nothing for that. But you know what? I did get a bunch of opportunities, so it's well worth it. And and all those opportunities led to the Tonight Show and different things like that. Yeah. Right. But yeah, that's how that was my very first time.
Okay. So you were basically paying your dues with Bill Bellamy.
Yeah, but already at that point, I had already been 8 years in the comedy. Like, already. It's been a long time.
So you paid all of your dues. You're like,
paying these dues.
Get me this coin.
Been paying them for sure.
But you did That's So Raven.
Mm-hmm.
And how was that?
That was fun. Raven Simone was so sweet, and she was young then. And I was young then, too.
So she wasn't like Raven on The View right now.
No, she was. That's a whole. I don't know that Raven. That's Raven. That's a grown ass woman right there. I don't know. I don't know that Raven, but yeah.
You did My Name is Earl.
Yeah, My Name is Earl. That was fun to work on that. It was only like one day, but it was great. And Sorry Sunny in Philadelphia. That was fun. Danny DeVito's head resting on my sternum made me feel so beautiful, you know. That was a dream come true.
So now when you were on these sets, and you know, and when you're doing this TV thing, like, were you like, this is something that I want to do every day, or was just like, this is great for what it is now?
Well, it was being on TV sets and stuff, like, back then and now, it's like, that's icing on the cake for me. Right. Like, what I love is to be on stage. I love to tell jokes. I love to get the immediate gratification. Being on a TV set or a movie set is just, that's extra. That's something, like, that's residual income. And, yeah, I love it because I love to perform. But it's nothing like doing stand-up comedy. I think, like, when people are like, oh, like, I do shows out of town, they're like, why does it cost so much? Why is it And I'm like, no, you're not paying me to tell jokes. I tell jokes for free. That part, that's free.
Right.
You're paying me to get there, to travel.
Right.
That's what you're paying me for, that long-ass plane ride and the car ride across the country field, you know. And so when I do these TV shows or whatever, I'm like, this. It's definitely a dream come true for me because it provides me with an avenue to do bigger venues, bigger comedy events. Be around people that can introduce me to club promoters that can pay me more money to travel, you know, and I love it.
Now, what's the roughest city that you've done comedy in?
The roughest city that I've done comedy in, well, I guess it's Baltimore.
Yeah.
But I do very well there. But yeah, that's a rough ass city. I done walked out of a comedy show and it was females fighting, snatching hair and everything. Like, whoa, it's Christmas. What's going on? Why are you throwing her into a wall? Like, that's a rough city. Yeah, I think that's the roughest.
Did you ever say anything on stage that like caused someone to like, I want to fight you now?
One time. Okay, so one time I almost got in a fight with a Spanish dude. He was drunk though, and he started heckling me. And like I said, I'm trying to pull your soul out your body.
Right.
And that he could not handle a woman, let alone a black woman, shutting him down. Like everything he said, it was nothing. He could not retaliate. So then he's talking about, I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna fuck you up. I'm gonna shoot you. I'm gonna beat your ass. Like, oh, come on, bring it, bull, bring it. Bring it, because I'm not afraid to fight you. And I wasn't. I took my earrings out, my ponytail off, all that. Another time, I was at the San Manuel Casino. Now, that's rough.
Is it really? San Manuel
Casino in San Bernardino. Yeah, that's where all the welfare rejects go. Like, that's where everybody at. It's hard. It's the bottoms of all minorities. It's not just black people or Hispanic. It's all the races are out there, and it's real bad. And, this girl told she wanted to fight me because she didn't like the way her dude was laughing at my jokes. She wanted to fight me because of that, because he was laughing too hard. And I was like, if you want to fight me because he's laughing, you need to get your shit together.
Yeah.
You obviously have a mental problem. But I'll fight you, though. I'll fight you because I ain't had a fight in a minute. I'm itching for some swinging. And then, like, I had so many fans there that they was like, Tiffany, you ain't got to fight her. I'm going to beat her ass. Like, and I just had to stand back, you know? It's been a lot of some. I would say probably once every 2 years I get into something like that.
Wow. Well, I mean, hopefully.
But I've never had to actually fight anybody, but they want
That's
to.
Good. That's yeah. good. Yeah. yeah. As long as, you know, you didn't have to actually swing and then now you got, you know. Because now there's way too much for you to even lose now to.
Yeah, so I'm sure people going to try me now.
Right.
They're going to try me.
You got to walk around with, like, Floyd.
That's how I bring my hood rats with me, too.
There you go. So. There you go. have them throw Alizé in people's faces. Set it off in the club.
Oh, girl, you want to fight? Okay, yeah, meet me outside. Keisha, Nene, handle this bitch.
where did she ready? Where did that come from?
That came from hanging with my cousins, and when we would go out to nightclubs and stuff, like, I would pull up, and, you know, somebody, one of my girls would come out the house and be like, oh, yes, girl, she ready. You gonna get pregnant tonight. You looking good. It's nothing but opportunity. And then, like, sometimes you come out the house and be like, oh, no, girl, she not ready. Mm-mm. You need to go back inside and redo yourself. Like,
wow.
But really, like, she ready is, like, a term of empowerment and a term, like, you know, be ready. Like, because anything can happen. This could be the day you meet your husband. You
right. Be the night to change your life.
Yes.
Yeah.
She ready. Stay ready. Yes.
What is your best advice for brand new comedians who brand new comedians and then brand new women comedians who are trying to break into the game? And
my best advice is do one thing every day towards your goal, no matter what it is. Maybe you just want to just do stand up and that's it. Or maybe you want to be a superstar. Well, you need to do one thing every day towards that goal. If you can get one thing in every day, you will achieve something major within a year. If you can get two or three or five things in every day towards a goal, you will achieve. So that means writing a joke every day or sitting down for 20 minutes a day and writing something, or making phone calls and talking to comedians, or calling up clubs or sending out packages, to get booked for shows. every day, because it's a business. Right. You know, it's really a business. People think like, oh, all I got to do is go on stage, be funny, somebody going to see me, and boom, that's it. No, it don't work like that. I thought it worked like that for years. I'm like, just when the right person see me, it's it. I'm going to be there. But the right person saw me a whole bunch of times, and I needed to be ready every single time. Like, I couldn't just be half-assing it on stage. Like, if I'm doing a show in Hollywood, I'm going to try to give 110%. And even when I was not strong, I was not a strong comic at first. It was very weak, and you can't let somebody telling you, you're not funny, or you ain't gonna make it, you need to just go ahead and have a baby. Like, don't let that deter you. Don't let that stop you. Just keep focused. Keep going. If you believe in yourself, everybody else gonna believe too. Watch.
Yeah.
And that's what I got to say.
That's great advice.
And don't fuck your coworkers until you make more money than them.
There you go. Right? And then make sure HR doesn't find out.
Don't shit where you eat.
What is the best advice that someone gave you, like, comedy-wise?
The best advice someone gave me, Richard Pryor gave me some really great advice. He said that people don't come to comedy shows because they want to hear about your problems or politics or celebrities or what's going on in the world or religion. They don't care about any of that. People come to comedy shows to have fun. Mm. So it doesn't really matter whatever you're talking about. Just have fun. Believe in what you're saying and have a good time. Because if you having fun, they having fun. And if you not having fun, they looking at you like, what the hell did I spend this money on?
Right.
So enjoy yourself. And that I've taken with me in everything in life. And I pretty much have a really awesome life. It's some messed up stuff here and there. But you know what? Yeah. Those situations make me money because I'll talk about them on stage.
Right. I want to congratulate you. One, on the Twitter verification.
Yes, finally been verified. I've been trying to get verified for years.
Yeah, you know, we all have Twitter. But no, I mean, because I know, like, 5 years ago, the blue check, that was, it's such a big thing. Mm-hmm. Now I feel like it doesn't hold as much weight as it used to because there's so many out there, but it still gives you that validation.
Right. Well, everybody know it's really you.
Right. That's really what it is.
Yeah. That's really what I wanted it for. And also, I just feel like, you know, I'm looking at, and I have to check myself because I do it sometimes and I need to stop. It's not good. It's not healthy. But you look at somebody else's and you're like, oh, they got a check mark. And then you look at their IMDb and you be like, why do they got a check mark?
Right,
like,
right.
What makes them, like, what are they doing that I'm not doing? Like, and then I'd say, stop that. That's evil thoughts. Don't think like that. You didn't, what they got is not for you. That's for them. That's their mark. You get your own damn mark when you get one. Just stay focused. Keep doing what you're doing. Stop looking in their lane. Stay in your lane. Watch your race. Do your race. I have to check myself so much about that. That's a woman thing. I don't know. Maybe it's a man thing.
I mean, I do the same thing. I live like, how does so-and-so get this check?
You know, like, I've been on 17 more programs than this. They ain't been on nothing. How do they? Like,
right. So, movies, TV, this is all
you know. Oh, they do one video, one YouTube video, and they get a check. Okay. I said, who working in the check mark department?
But it went viral, though. So that's the reason. They got one viral video.
Yeah, well, I had at least 6 viral videos.
Well, that don't mean shit.
But now I'm verified. Now it is me, you guys. It's not somebody pretending to be Haddish. It's real Haddish.
And you know,
and I'm happy about it. Even though somebody told me Twitter was dead, I don't give a fuck.
Twitter's coming back.
I'll revive it.
Twitter's coming back. You know, like, I've, and because, like, especially, like, I feel like Twitter is really a comics medium to where, you know, they can pop off something 140 characters if it gets a lot of retweets, a lot of favorites, you know, people commenting on it, you know, like, this is.
Okay, I'm on the right track.
Right. You know, and then you can actually, like, at somebody too and be like, hey, so and so, yada, yada.
Right.
You know, they could reach out to the real Tiffany Haddish at Tiffany Haddish.
Yeah, and I'll probably see a. And I'll probably respond with a favorite or
terrible.
A follow back.
Favorite is the worst thing that you
really?
Can do. Yeah.
Don't favorite?
Retweet. Like, what are you saying? If you really like it, hit that retweet.
I don't want to retweet, like, when somebody's like, oh, you are so beautiful and so sexy to me. I don't want to retweet that for some reason. For some reason, I want to just favorite that.
Or, like, or comment you made on me, it.
Or, yeah, I'll comment, but I'm not going to retweet because it's like me being conceited.
But you have the blue check mark now.
So I know, but I don't want to be, I don't want to retweet like, dang, you so sexy. I bet your pussy smell great. Like, wow. What? Like, what? I'm not retweeting that.
That you need to retweet.
I'm not retweeting it. I'm not retweeting that. That's inappropriate.
All right. Well, I'll
put a star on it.
But if someone's like, I enjoyed the show last night.
I'll retweet that one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Or someone's like, congratulations on season 2.
Yeah.
On the season 2 pickup of the Carmichael show.
Favorite it and be like, thank you very much, sweetie. Retweet.
There you go. So, yeah, what was that feeling when, how did you find out that you guys got picked up for a second season?
Lil Rel called me and told me. And then my agent called me like 2 hours later.
Nice.
Yeah, that's how I found out over the phone.
Did you freak out?
No, because I was just a guest star, like just guest star reoccurring on the show. So I wasn't a series regular yet or anything like that. So for me, I'm like, this is awesome. Hope I get to be a part of it.
Right.
I didn't like know for sure if I was going to be on, like, hope I get to be in at least 2 episodes.
Right.
No, that's how I thought of it. And then they came back with a contract, like, we want you in, you know, 10 out of the 13. Great. Now I'm even more excited.
Yeah.
But still, you know, I don't get too amped up because I've had so many opportunities. I've been on so many different projects that get picked up and then they don't use me. Or they use me, but then they edit me out. Or, you know, it's so many. It could be like I just don't put all my eggs in one basket because you can get very depressed.
Right.
You can get very depressed. You'd be like, oh, yeah, I'm finna do this. I'm finna do that. And then, no, that don't happen. Didn't go through. Fuck.
But now that, because, you know, this is network and this is a strong network and ratings are fantastic, you know what I mean? And people love the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all black cast, which is, you know, it was unheard of 10 years ago because we went through a white period.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say dark period, but we went through a white period, you know, of nothing. Nothing on TV. So it's great to see a good quality show of substance. You know, with positive characters. And, you know, of course, you got David Alan Greer.
Yes.
And Loretta Devine.
Oh, I love working with her. Yes.
What was that like when you found out, one, that, you know, you got the role and you're like, oh, my God. And you got Loretta Devine and David Alan Greer, who are also a part of the show.
Well, look, I didn't even get the role. I was there helping out. Because the girl that they gave the part to was doing the play. So then I was like, they asked me if I could come in and just do the table read for the network. I was like, no problem. And I didn't even realize like that. So when I went in for the table read to do for the network, I was like, oh, David Alan Greer's right there. Yeah. Red Devine's right next to me. Oh my God, this is crazy. Like, looking at them, I'm breathing their air. They're legends. They're the masters. Oh my gosh, I'm gonna learn so much in this one day. Like, I'm gonna take the best, you know, I'm not gonna take pictures. I'm not gonna be that chick. I'm just gonna listen to everything they do, watch them, and learn everything I can learn from them right now, today, because this might be the only chance I get. And then they asked me to come back to help them rehearse. And so then I was like, oh, now I'm going to get to get on my feet with them. I'm going to get to read with them. Oh, this is so awesome. Oh, I love being a stand-in. I love this. Like, I'm just standing in, just helping out. And then the girl comes back, and then they ask me, do I want the job? I'm like, yes, I want the job. Yeah. Oh, my God, I'm working with them. I'm just shooting a pilot with them. This is so cool. I'm just here to help. I'm just being of service. This is so dope. Like, and they were giving me tips and, like, how to do things. And it's like, when you... I'm not going to cry, but I might. But when you think about, like, where I come from, and then, like, I'm sitting across from these people that I watched, and that I wanted to be, like, always wanted Loretta to be my mama. Like, I thought if Loretta Devine was my mom, my life would be so much better. And, like, and here I am, 20-something years later, Loretta Devine is my mom. She my stepmom. She my mother-in-law. But, like, it's, like, it's such a blessing. I'm so grateful and so, like, excited about the whole experience. And sometimes I walk into work and I'm like, this is a dream. Somebody's about to wake me up and I'm going to be in the group home. Like, you know, it's super dope. Like, it's just, it's a dream come true. And I'm super happy. Super happy.
No, that's, you know, and again, that's what's similar. Like, because you're living the dream right now. Like, every comedian wants that. Like, every comedian wants to be able to kill the stage the way you do. you know, the way you just command that. Because I've seen you perform. I think the first time I saw you perform live may have been on Mo Better Mondays.
Hardest night in LA.
Yeah. I was like, who is this? She is killing her. You had long leather pants and you were stomping on stage and swinging the hair. And I was like, yeah, I was like, okay, she's hilarious. And then two, I'm like, this is ridiculous. Cause like, just the confidence that you had and just, you know, your jokes were just hitting and people was like, you know, cause like I watch audiences whenever mm-hmm. comics are on stage, you know, just kind of mm-hmm. see how they react, see what jokes hit. And I was like, yeah, you had everyone just in the palm of your hand the entire set. It was fantastic.
I was just being honest.
Yeah.
That's like the key. I was having fun. I always have fun in there.
Yeah.
When I'm not having fun, it is horrible. It is horrible.
Yeah, then you need to just stop.
Yeah,
stop.
I need to be like, you know what? This ain't fun for me, and I know it ain't fun for you. Bye.
So, as we wrap up, mm-hmm. because we've seen everything, we've talked about almost everything now, mm-hmm. what do you still want to do? Because you've done movies, you're on TV, you're killing stages. What else do you want to do? What else does Tiffany Haddish want to do with her career?
Tiffany Haddish wants to turn She Ready Productions into like what Oprah Winfrey did.
Harpo.
I want to do that. Okay. I want to influence people and inspire them to laugh and enjoy life and let them know that, you know, no matter where you come from, no matter what you've been through, you can achieve whatever it is you want to, because your mind is super powerful. We're all created in God's image, and you can be whatever the hell you want to be. And so I want to create movies and TV shows that are inspiring like that.
Wow.
That's it.
And I want you to.
And I want some horses.
all black horses.
All black everything. One around. White one. But I want some horses, and I want to open up a nightclub for handicapped people.
Nice.
Because I never seen one before.
Either.
They deserve to have a good time, too. They like to go to the casino.
Right.
Have a nightclub.
See? That's, no one steal that. Because that's a Tiffany Haddish production. She ready production,
yeah,
idea right there.
I've been saying that for years too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that'll take off.
I'm sure.
But you gotta open it in like Alabama. It's not, you can't do it in Hollywood, you gotta do it in like some random country or some random city.
I'm gonna do it where it's heavy with vets.
Okay, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I guess there's a handicapped nightclub called the VFW where veterans hang out. But
wow.
But I mean, that don't really count.
Right, yeah.
Because it's no, you know, I'm going to have some tenderonis in there and everything. It's going to be popping.
Where can people see you live next? What are your dates coming up?
I'm going to be at the Long Beach Laugh Factory tonight in Long Beach. Also on the Carmichael Show. And I do have some comedy show dates coming up, but they're very far in the future, and I can't remember them right now.
Okay. When does season 2 of the Carmichael Show premiere?
March 13th. Sunday night, yes. The Carmichael Show season 2. We're back, baby, and we're funny. And our first episode is dealing with Bill Cosby, so it's going to be real interesting.
Timely.
Yes.
Timely. And where can folks find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter, where there's a check mark next to my name, Tiffany Haddish, or on Facebook at Tiffany Haddish. Instagram, too. I'll be on my Instagram. I'll be popping in the DMs.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Congratulations on all the success. Much more success in the future. I know it's coming.
Oh, thank you, man.
I had fun.
I had fun, too.
I was a fan, and now I'm like a super fan. I'm like a super Tiffany Haddish fan.
Do you want to be my boyfriend?
I mean, we can do some things.
I don't have time for that. We can pretend, though.
Thank you. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Stand Up Sit Down. I'm your host, Nick Perdue. You can find me all over the internet at The Nick Perdue. See you next time.
He ready.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Christian, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagramming, at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.